Hello, my dearest brother or sister in Christ. Brother Michael here. I think this little message will be really encouraging to anybody who is struggling against wickedness, where somebody in your life is captive to the spirit of Satan and they're doing hurt to you. And Lisa and I have been studying a lot, again, some of the Puritans, John Flavel, and the divine mystery of providence and the connection between God's sovereignty and suffering. And they flat laid it out as I have in all my recordings, because I believe what they also believed, that God is totally in control of everything in your life, including the sufferings, which actually are all a part of His eternal decrees. So for example, what that would look like in my life is that when God strikes Carrie at her heart and turns her from, you know, what she once potentially could have been into what we would see in a King Saul when he becomes basically devil-possessed and starts to torment David, we can know that that came directly from God in David's life, and we can know that what happened with Carrie came directly from God in my life. Afflictions come to all of us, whether you are godless or godly. God allows all sufferings and trials to happen to people in this life. But biblically, the theology that we believe, the same theology that Puritans had, is that any affliction that comes to you and I is a sanctified affliction. It's been set at you by God, decreed in your life for a very different purpose than are the judgments, the sufferings, and the trials that come from His hand to the life of unbelievers. And there's all kinds of scriptures. This isn't a Bible study that talks about calamities and death and destruction comes from God. We often think that all bad comes from Satan and all good comes from God, but it's just not true. He's sovereign over all of it. Directly, it may come from Satan, but Satan is never outside of God's sovereign total control. And I think we can really see some of these doctrines that Lisa and I have been studying about the Puritans. We see them come to life so vividly, like in the 777 Man on Relentless Heart, the timing page under the About Ministry page, where you see that it looks like Carrie is striking out or Satan is striking out, but you find out that's all being ordered, sovereignly controlled, and eternally decreed by God, because you can see the connections to time are undeniable, that these things are not happening because of human free will or random natural occurrences. So that means when people show up and make videos about me, like a Taylor, I have to believe, if I believe my doctrine, if I believe what the Puritans taught, like John Flavel, I have to believe that God raised them up for a reason, for my good. And so you have to believe that when God raises up an enemy in your camp, it is for your good, and it may not feel like it in the moment, but if you'll persevere and you'll humble yourself, just like a Thomas Boston taught in The Crook in the Lot, that when God sends these heavy afflictions, He expects us to humble ourselves and repent. So what this would look like in your life is when one of these afflictions come, no matter who it comes from, instead of seeing the individual, we have to, by faith, naturally we see it comes from this person that we're in really an antagonistic relationship with, but we have to say, what do we believe? Is God in control or not? And you know, you could say, hey, I've seen Brother Michael's story. I've seen the thing with the spouses. I've seen the thing with the timing of what happened after Taylor's video came out and how it clearly shows that God is controlling all of these things. Incredible control. I can't understand it, but I believe it by faith. And you have to believe the same thing in your life. These things are happening to you by God's sovereign decree. So we would be reminded of all that the Puritans taught, like Thomas Boston, who wrote the book, The Crook in the Lot. And he would say that when these afflictions come, and so would John Flavel, when these afflictions come, what does God expect from us? He expects, since He sent them, for us to humble ourselves beneath them. And sometimes that's very difficult to do, but the sooner we do it, the quicker we can begin to receive the good that God intends for us. And having said all of that, I'm reminded recently when I received a text message this past week from Tyler, where he found that one of my old enemies was back at it again. And I know that a few of you even commented on YouTube recently that, oh, Michael, these people are, you know, coming back again and making videos, etc. And somebody, it might have been Michael Trissel, somebody had mentioned that the amount of antagonism that comes against me from a few individuals is so out of character for what a typical attack situation would be like this because I'm not famous, because I'm not known. You know, famous and known people get attacked all the time. And he was suggesting that because I'm not a very known person, but for people to be so obsessed in this way like that, he says it shows it has to be spiritual. And that's what I've been actually teaching all these years, that it's not me that people hate. It's not you that people hate. If you're going to go on with Jesus and the seed of Jesus Christ is in you, it is invisible, maybe just walking around in a store, but it's very visible in the spiritual realm that you're a child of God, and Satan aims his wrath and fury at you. And he'll wait until an appointed time, and he'll leave for a time and come back at an opportune time. But he will, his seed, enmity, Genesis chapter 3, between his seed and the seed of Christ, he will come at you if you're a true Christian. So this past week, I received an email. There's some really good news about this. And then I want to share with you an incredible recording that I made for Lisa just the other morning, where I found, for the first time in all these years of being a Christian, I found out something remarkable about a lot of these famous Christians that we all revere and hold in such beautiful light because their lives were the character of Christ, their faith was the faith of Christ, and their fruit was the fruit of Christ, and they finished their life well. I've discovered that there is a vein of a particular affliction and suffering in their life that I've also found in my life, and I think you'll find it in your life, and it's absolutely incredible because it's the one thing that my enemies have attempted to totally discredit me in my ministry with. It's the one thing that you see as a theme Satan keeps attempting to attack. So this past week, Tyler found that one of my enemies has come back and started making videos again. And when he sent me the link, I discovered that this person had actually stolen two of my private videos, a video I made teaching Keeley how to turn Trusting God in the Wilderness recordings into transcripts and a 300-word blog post so that we can finally have what's called metadata on our website so that people can find them. Trusting God in the Wilderness is by far the most popular listen-to series I've ever had, I think, in the history of the ministry. But unfortunately, there's no titles to any of it. There's no descriptions and there's no keywords. There's no way for you to find what is this teaching about. So about a year ago, we offered Keeley a job because she was struggling with the amount of schoolwork she was doing, and we were going to take her off of her allowance and we wanted her to start to work. So I thought, aha. So we'll give her instructions on how to use AI to transcribe and create descriptions and all that. This was a private video just to Keeley. Somehow or another, don't know how they did this, but they stole that video along with another video I had made back in 2022 about Taylor and her video and how I saw this incredible 1 Samuel 5:3 and 5:4 providence that was leading me to believe God was showing me that Dagon, if you will, was going to fall, and that being Taylor, where Taylor had taken my testimony into her camp, just like the Philistines took the Ark of the Testimony into their camp. And they took that testimony of God and they put it in front of their false god, believing that their false god, Dagon, was superior to the true God. And you know the story that Dagon, as soon as they leave, falls on his face. So they come back in and they lift back up Dagon. And it says the next morning when they came in, he had fallen flat on his face, broken his head, broken his arms, and broken his feet. It was the idea that God was making it known this did not happen by natural occurrences. This was not an earthquake. This wasn't wind. It was the next day it fell over and collapsed. And I had this incredible thought, maybe God is showing me this video is going to come down soon. That didn't happen. I never shared that video with anybody. It was just a private personal journal entry where I was believing that maybe God is telling me this. But what did happen? Taylor ended up falling exactly like the video and the scripture would entail, me not knowing the whole meaning of it at that point. And as it turns out, you can see later, Taylor did come down like a Dagon. And she has had her spiritual head, her spiritual feet, and her spiritual arms cut off. She has no work, no Jesus. Everything became totally godless, exactly like a spiritual fulfillment of 1 Samuel 5:3 and 4. That video was private. It was also stolen. And then these videos were turned into an evil suspicion narrative once again. Michael Criswell's been found out. He's making blog entries with AI. I would ask you, have you ever seen a blog entry on trusting God in the wilderness? Where are they? First of all, even if we did, we're only making a blog entry from original content that I created. And of course, all of my messages, all of my ministry, it's all been recorded and put out there long before AI ever even had its first, you know, public appearance. So everything is authentic. We use AI every single day to help us transcribe, to help us create our YouTube descriptions, and hopefully to one day help us create all the descriptions and some sort of a descriptive blog entry for trusting God in the wilderness. We are gonna do that, and we are proud of it, and we are thankful so much for AI as a tool. Little disclaimer, please don't ask AI about your soul. Don't ask AI about your faith. Don't ask AI about your mental situations or anything psychological. If you want to ask it how to add some code to your website so that these, you know, banners line up, if you want to ask it what's its recommendation about a few little medicines or a few little car techniques to get more gas mileage or whatever, please feel free to do that, but be very cautious. Be very cautious. You can see this thing flatters you. It tries to win you over. It's not intelligent at all. It's just a basic, gigantic pit of all the human knowledge basically in the world. That's all it is. It's totally not intelligent. Don't think it is. It makes mistakes. I've had to correct it several times in working with it, but I find it to be such a valuable tool. How do I set up this spreadsheet? How do I make it so that when people come to my website, they see this over this banner? How do I set up my email system like this? Like, it helped me figure out how to get my email set up such that they're not all going into people's spam. So I'm super thankful for things like that, but do not touch AI regarding your soul or your spirit. Please be very careful. If you want to ask it about Christian history, wonderful. So the point is, this person stole these two videos somehow, put them on his website, and started casting all these evil suspicions again. And suddenly I thought, man, that is just so wrong that he stole my private videos, not to mention that, you know, he just turns everything into an evil narrative against me. He's just so convinced. So I finally found out with the help of AI that I could file copyright disputes. In fact, I could even sue him for defamation. And because he stole my content, there's some law called first right of presentation that in the copyright law says that if it's my content, I better have the first right of making it publicly known. And if not, somebody can be legally liable. And it was telling me that I could sue him for between a few $100 all the way up to $150,000 in a defamation lawsuit against him. So it was pretty serious. I thought, wow, this is pretty outrageous what this guy has done. And so I sent all of the whole copy of what AI said about what could happen to him to him and said, man, you could be in some real trouble. And then I immediately went to YouTube and I filed a copyright takedown notice. And to the praise of God, brothers and sisters, to the praise of God, the three videos that were the issue were all taken down. We succeeded in our copyright takedown. And what was the date that the videos came down? 5-3 and 5-4. That's 1 Samuel chapter 5, verse 3, about Dagon being set up in front of the ark and falling. And then verse 5-4, they came in the next morning, just like I did this morning, to find out the last video fell. The very video that he used to mock me, God ended up, I had no idea he would do this, God ended up bringing his videos down on 5-3, 1 Samuel 5-3, and 5-4, 1 Samuel 5-4. Just incredible. It shows again how sovereign God is. You see that when you think they're operating by themselves, they are not. God is timing it all. And this applies to your life. You may not visibly see the time frames like God has chosen to do in my life, but you can know the same God is sovereign and in control over every detail of whatever is being done to you or what's not being done to you. God is sovereign over it all. Do not forget that. So brothers and sisters, we woke up today. We were so thankful that God protected us in this way and took it all down from this person who's just so blinded by hate, perhaps envy, jealousy, and a real victim of boredom. So brothers and sisters, I'll leave it there. It's a good reminder for all of us that God is in control of all the afflictions. And when he sees that it's had its work, he will remove it. And we cannot be afraid. We're always going to have sufferings. There's always going to be somebody to hurt us, to do evil to us, to be wicked towards us. We have to just trust that every one of them come from the Lord's hand. I have been so thankful this side of all those torments that caused me such grief for a season in my life. I ended up being run out of my house. Many of you remember that story because of Taylor and Matthew 24:11. And I lost a great deal of the ministry, but we are back. There's resurrection life and no weapon formed against us shall prosper. So even if you look like you're being defeated temporarily, it will turn for your good, and wait and trust in the sovereign power and resurrection power of Jesus Christ in your life. I'll end this here. Now have a listen to this recording that I made with Lisa about what I discovered in the lives of some of the most famous Christians that have ever lived that I saw, oh my goodness, this is exactly what's happened with me. And I think you might also find it's happened to you. God bless you as you listen. I want to record this because I found this to be very exciting, very edifying and encouraging. So one of the guys asks, do you have a list of all the things that Michael Criswell has prophesied about that he's been wrong about? And he goes, oh man, I've been working on this. And they're going back and forth in this whole comment section about all the things that I've put out and openly talked about where I conjectured wrongly. And of course, I think I may have made the point in the two videos that I did about when it looks like God has deceived you, tried to help people see that there is a distinct difference between a person conjecturing about something in their own private life versus all the statements that I would consider to be prophesied about regarding things in the world, things mm-hmm. regarding like, no, Donald Trump is not going to be elected a second consecutive term. I put that out publicly. No, there is not going to be any revival from COVID-19. I put that out there publicly. No, the world is not going to end. I said this over and over again on September 23rd. You know, it's not going to happen. Not to mention all the remarkable times, praise God, where I put a warning out, not knowing what was going to happen in a precise period of time, but that I put all these warnings out and then as I'm warning, we find out to the day, there's these terrible tragedies, right? That we've all talked about on the prophecy page. So I'm looking at all of this. And of course, he's mentioning, you know, about Persis not coming back. And he's mentioning about me not being, you know, in New Zealand on 9/11, et cetera. And then also he found the video that I also had privately unlisted where I had that incredible 503 Providence that was connecting to Taylor's video where there was the 503 views and it was time 503. It was just really incredible. I believe I have shared this list before, but these are the seven times that I know of that I have been wrong. I thought that I would marry Laura. God led me to believe I would marry Laura. I did not. I thought I would meet her on the 777th day after meeting her, you know, the first time. I did not. I thought for sure my children would never turn against me. I told my mom, I said, oh, you're wrong about that. My children are never going to turn against me. I was totally wrong about this. I was wrong thinking that I believed that Providence was showing me that maybe Zach Poonen was going to marry Persis and I because I had seen a bunch of signs that looked like it. That ended up not happening. I was totally wrong thinking that Persis was going to come back. I was then wrong during COVID-19 thinking that Gustavo's father would not recover from COVID-19 when he was in the hospital. I had this just terrible feeling that came upon me when I was in the woods, and it felt to me like I was sensing God telling me he wasn't going to recover and that I would, you know, need to be able to go through this with Gustavo. That didn't happen. And then finally, thinking that I would marry you and be in New Zealand on 9/11. So these are all things that I strongly believed would happen in my life that did not. These were not things that I was prophesying about other people's lives. The passages in Deuteronomy 13 and 18 are about prophets prophesying things that are going to happen to you, things that are going to happen in the world, famine, pestilence, war, disease, striking, all this kind of stuff, that if what he prophesies doesn't come to pass, don't be afraid of him. It's not about a prophet hoping or thinking that something
was going to come to pass in his personal life that didn't. If that's the case, then you need to rip out the entire book of Jeremiah, and all the other people like Moses that I went and showed all believed God was going to do something, and he did not. Hence the reason why Jeremiah has to cry out against God, you deceived me.
Yeah.
Okay? The body of Christ, so-called, the people who call themselves Christians, are attempting to hold me to a standard that they don't even hold people in the Bible to.
That's the standard, right? Yeah, that's right.
And I've shown that in the series that I did called When It Looks Like God Has Deceived You.
Yeah.
And they're not distinguishing between me making personal conjectures about things I believe. I'm on the look for signs in providence. I have a living relationship with God. And they want to, you know, if I were to say, look, these are the seven times that I've been wrong, but how many times have I been right? And I say this ever so humbly before you, Lord. Because I realize that, and there's so much to be said about this, you're not going to believe what I found this morning on the internet.
Okay.
About how many times this has happened in the lives of famous Christians. Honey, they're all false prophets. C.S. Lewis, throw him out, get rid of him. George Whitefield, the movie that's out about him right now, he was totally wrong, throw him out, he's a false prophet.
Oh, really?
I can show you account after account that it has happened to literally everyone. And so here's the thing. That we have friends and family members who have made specific statements about things they believe were going to happen or not happen in the world that then totally did not all happen. And so you and I have sometimes behind the scenes conjectured, okay, let's flip the table here on the people who accuse me of, hey, you can never listen to anything Michael says because he's a false prophet. And if what the prophet says doesn't come to pass, you should not listen to him, you should not be afraid of him anymore, then we want to simply turn that around on all people, everyone, people that are with me and people that are against me, and say, have you ever?
Yeah, exactly.
Have you not ever conjectured about something you thought that was going to happen in your life or something that would affect your life that didn't? Have you never had that happen? Have you been right about everything you've conjectured? Okay, so I have openly confessed that I have been wrong about these seven things that I've conjectured in my life. They never happened. I was totally wrong. I thought for sure I was hearing from God that this would come to pass, and it did not, okay? But what about all the other things that I did hear from God correctly on? Tell Lisa she is to be your wife. Go to India. You'll get through the law. You'll marry Persa. Start building that tiny house. Even though you don't have the money for the trailer, you'll do it. Go pick up Tyler. Bring him into your home. I will overcome Carrie and all that satanic fury that's going to come at you. Go to that court. Do not prepare any way to defend yourself. Fire your attorney. Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. Over and over and over, it's proven that I have heard from God in these ways, okay? Mm-hmm. A lot. And I used to say how God showed me all these things happening in advance. If you watch the False God Challenge series, you see all those things happen by me hearing God and then moving forward in faith into something that couldn't happen unless God did it, right? And there is no way the tiny house could have gotten to New Zealand had God not told me it was supposed to be there. No way at all, okay? Mm-hmm. So I decide to ask AI to do some research through Christian history and help me see, I'm just going to actually tell you exactly what I said. Oops, got to turn it on.
His hate started as soon as God put you and I together.
Yeah, it's jealousy.
That's when all the videos came. So he was hoping his wife would come back. She didn't.
Right.
You end up getting married a third time. We end up having this most incredible marriage that we can only describe as supernatural, like an arranged marriage. Well, not like, was an arranged marriage for God, where it's like we're absolute soulmates. We couldn't have found a better partner ourselves, and neither could the expert psychologists who do married at first sight. They get it wrong every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was eaten up with jealousy and hate and anger. And that was when all the videos started to come out.
Yeah. I forgot to mention to you that I filed copyright strikes against all of him.
Okay.
Almost all of his, not all of them, but I didn't want to take the time to do it. But I found out that I have a right for him to not use my content. And I also struck one of his content for harassment. I mean, he's calling me Sauron, the Dark Lord of the Lord of the Rings. So, I mean, he's just such a foolish person. It's so I'm looking at all of this And so, you know, I clicked a harassment file and then also privacy violation. I filed a privacy violation because he's using my private information to then turn around and make this false, evil suspicion narrative about it that we're doing all this crazy stuff to scam people. And it's just incredible. So many times I've seen in my inbox, people will send me emails thinking, I thought for sure God put this marriage together. I thought for sure God told me he was coming back. She was coming back. I thought for sure, you know, this was going to happen, and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And when you believe so strongly you've heard God, you personally conjecture that you have, and you may have signs and evidence and it doesn't happen. It can be devastating to your faith. But this is a phenomenon that happens in everyone's life, whether you're a lay person, whether you're a minister, a prophet, a priest, whether you're whatever, it's happening, whether you're famous or not famous. Mm. So here's what I asked AI. I asked Gemini this morning. I am interested in learning about famous or well-known Christians in the last 500 years who had instances where they thought with great certainty something was going to happen in their ministry, perhaps a deliverance, perhaps an open door, perhaps a great blessing, perhaps a great opening for work, perhaps a family member being restored to health, etc. But in the end, it did not happen. It would be something that make them look foolish, like they hadn't correctly heard from God. Perhaps they may have thought they were deceived, and even others thought they may have been deceived. And yet in all their manner, such as character and the history of their life, they were considered to be a very godly and fruitful servant of the Lord. I guess what I'm saying is, are there any recorded instances about them where they conjectured incorrectly about what they expected God was going to do in a certain situation? Mm-hmm. So you've already heard me go through the seven things that I've conjectured wrong and believed wrong about.
Mm-hmm.
It says this, word for word, "It is a profound and often overlooked aspect of church history, quote, the dark night of the soul that comes not from a lack of faith, but from a faith that felt certain of a specific outcome that never materialized." I might throw you into the mix, believing that your ex-spouse was going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
"Many of the giants of the faith experienced moments where they publicly or privately staked their reputation on a move of God that did not happen as they predicted."
I had a few. I thought God was leading me to subdivide my section and build a house at the end of my section. And I was starting to draw it up, and man, all the providence that was coming, and then this builder I found, and then he happened to be a Christian, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I think this is it. God's led me here. I also was wondering if God was wanting me to foster children. So I started to draw up the house to have enough bedrooms to be able to foster a couple of children.
And so you were wrong about all those things. You conjectured strongly. So we should throw you out as a false prophet, right?
Yeah.
But why can't we throw you out as a false prophet? Because you were right that God wanted me to send the tiny house to New Zealand. Because you were right to ask God for a $40,000 fleece. Because you were right when God said to you, and it's you.
And he will call tomorrow morning. And you did.
Correct.
I mean, what if he didn't call the next day after I got told?
Right.
You'll hear from him in the morning.
Correct. You were right when you told family member and friends that this marriage was of God and that it was a blessing, etc. So, and we can just keep going on and on. Yeah. So we can say, okay, hold on. You were wrong about the building on the property. You were wrong about serving women in the ministry and all that. But you've been right about so many other things, and wisdom is proved right by her children, the outcome, the offspring, the effect, right? Okay. Now, the first example it gives is C.S. Lewis and the, quote, stay of execution. Now, think about how many people revere C.S. Lewis.
Yeah.
They go and see his movies. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars to go see him, to produce his movies. They buy his books. They love writing about him, talking about him. All Christians love C.S. Lewis. Well, we have to throw him out as a false prophet because he falsely prophesied.
Yeah.
Okay. He believed that God told him something. Now here's incredible. This is so incredible to see because it so specifically matches what I did with Persis. Notice how it says that they staked their reputation on a move of God that did not happen as they predicted. What did I say? If Persis doesn't come back, you should consider me as a false prophet. Never listen to another word I said. I staked my entire reputation on it.
Yeah.
But I'm in a long line of list of people who have done this.
Yeah.
And I never knew this. I've never known this before. C.S. Lewis and the stay of execution. While primarily known as an apologist and author, Lewis's personal journals, later published as, quote, a grief observed, reveal a man who felt he had received a specific assurance from God regarding his wife's health. Just like I believed I received a specific assurance from God of my wife's spiritual apostasy and health. The expectation. When his wife, Joy Davidman, was dying of cancer, she experienced a sudden, miraculous remission. Lewis, along with their friends, felt, quote, a great certainty that God had granted a complete healing. He spoke of it as, quote, a stay of execution, and felt he had, quote, heard that they would have many years together.
Wow.
The reality, the cancer returned with a vengeance shortly after, and Joy died. The aftermath. Lewis felt the door was slammed in his face. He wrestled with the feeling that he had been toyed with or had completely misread the voice of God. Despite this period of perceived deception and deep doubt, Lewis remained one of the most influential Christian voices of the 20th century. How incredible is this? Okay, so you remember in the video series I did, When It Looks Like God Deceived You, I went and made a list of all these prophets that said things that did not come to pass. Mm-hmm. I showed that Isaiah was wrong, Jeremiah was wrong. I showed that Eli the priest, I showed how Jacob was wrong about Joseph. I showed how Moses was wrong about bringing all of Israel into the promised land. I just made this whole list. I can't even remember them all off the top of my head. You know, David was wrong. He was not going to lose his life to King Saul. There was just all kinds of them in the Bible. Mm-hmm. These conjectures that were made or things that you thought were going to happen because you heard from God and they didn't. Mm-hmm. And then behind each one of those, I read Deuteronomy 18, 22. And so now, after what I just shared with C.S. Lewis, because this is what they hold against me. When I had said that Persis was going to come back and she didn't, here's what they read against me. If what a prophet proclaims in the name of the Lord does not take place or come true, that is a message the Lord has not spoken. That prophet has spoken presumptuously. Do not be afraid of him. Mm-hmm. And I showed how you should throw out all the prophets mm-hmm. because they were all wrong. I mean, Jeremiah is crying out, you know, you have deceived me, mm-hmm. right? And Moses is saying, if this is how you're going to treat me, just put me to death now, right? And he doesn't make it into the promised land like he tells everybody he and the Israelites are going to. And none of them, exception of Joshua and Caleb, make it. He was wrong over and over again. So you would read these, this Deuteronomy 18:22 behind every one of these, okay? Here's another one. Adoniram Judson, one of my favorites. And the open door of Burma. Judson was the first American foreign missionary, a man of incredible character who spent years in Burma, now Myanmar. The expectation. Judson entered Burma with a burning certainty that the, quote, fields were white for harvest. He expected an immediate opening for the gospel and a quick work of the Spirit. The reality. He labored for 7 years before seeing a single convert. During this time, he was imprisoned in, quote, a death house. His wife and children died of disease, and he suffered such a deep depression that he dug his own grave and sat beside it for days. The foolishness. The mission boards back in America, to them, Judson looked like a failure who had misheard his calling. He had, quote, prophesied a great work, yet he was left alone in a jungle, grieving and seemingly forgotten by God. By the time he died, there were thousands of Burmese believers and a completed translation of the Bible. His, quote, incorrect timing did not negate his, quote, correct calling. I think of New Zealand when I think of that.
Yeah, so did I.
That's what I think of is New Zealand. Because we know that I end up in New Zealand, but just not according to the timing I thought. Three, Rhys Howells and the, quote, grants of faith. Rhys Howells, the founder of the Bible College of Wales and a famous intercessor, was known for, quote, decreeing things in prayer with absolute certainty. The expectation. During the 1930s and World War II, Howells often felt he had received, quote, a grant of faith, a divine guarantee that certain events would or would not happen. For example, he was at times certain that specific battles would end instantly or that certain political doors would open to prevent conflict. The reality, there were several recorded instances where Howell made a public claim in the college chapel that God was going to do X by a certain date, and it simply did not happen. The perception. These moments were deeply humbling. Students and staff had to watch their leader, a man they knew was truly hearing from God in other areas, deal with the, quote, silence of God when his conjectures failed. He had to learn the hard distinction between his own intense desire and a true divine decree. So here we go. We're going to now say Deuteronomy 18:22. He's a false prophet. Mm-hmm. Throw him out. All of that, right? All the good stuff that these other people testified to seeing in him, seeing evidence that he was hearing from God, forget about it. Throw it out. Deuteronomy 18:22. Okay, number four, William Cowper and the promise of mercy. The 18th century poet and hymnist William Cowper, author of There is a Fountain Filled with Blood, is perhaps the most tragic example of this phenomenon, the expectation. Cowper lived with a recurring certainty that God had spoken to him. However, due to his struggle with severe melancholy, likely clinical depression, he became convinced that God had specifically commanded him to sacrifice his life, or, quote, had promised him a specific sign of salvation that never came. The deception. He often felt he was being, quote, mocked by voices or impressions he thought were divine. To his friend John Newton, author of Amazing Grace, Cowper looked like a man deceived by his own mind. Yet Newton never doubted Cowper's genuine godliness. The paradox. Cowper died believing he was a castaway. Yet he is now regarded as one of the most spiritually sensitive and fruitful hymnists in history. His life is a testament to the fact that a person can, quote, feel deceived by God while being held firmly in his hand. And I point you back to Jeremiah the prophet. Key takeaways from these figures. In almost every case where, quote, a godly servant conjectured incorrectly, three things were true: subjectivity versus sovereignty. They mistook the intensity of their own faith for a guarantee of God's timing. Two, the foolish filter. God allowed them to look foolish to strip away any remaining pride in their spiritual giftings. I have always seen that God allowing me to be wrong in these ways has been so good for my pride, mm-hmm. to keep me hamstrung, to keep like Jacob walking with a limp.
Yeah.
You have to be kept low and humble. You have to. And when God is keeping one of his servants low and humble, you don't throw him away. You celebrate God's goodness in them and his grace to them that they persevere in faith despite the humiliation, despite the great humbling event. And you know, somehow or another, you know deep down that pride is rooted in Satan. And that if God allows in a minister that he blesses to grow in pride, he's allowing them to grow in death.
Yeah.
You see? So then it says long-term fruit, their, quote, mistake in the short term, thinking a family member would live, or in my instance, come back, or a door would open, often led to a deeper, more refined ministry in the long term. Praise God. This phenomenon is what some theologians have called the prophetic delay, or the refining of the seer. Seer is just another word for prophet.
Mm-hmm.
It is a recurring theme in the church history. A leader of undeniable character and fruitfulness becomes, quote, absolutely certain of a divine timeline, only for that timeline to pass in silence. The following examples involve men who were giants of the faith, yet each faced a moment where their public confidence in God's timing failed, often leaving them humbled or even mocked by their contemporaries. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
George Whitefield. I find this so interesting because his movie is in the theaters right now, A Great Awakening, mm-hmm. and we wanted to go see it. George Whitefield was arguably the most famous preacher of the Great Awakening. He was a man of immense prayer and apostolic fruit. However, he experienced a crushing miss regarding his own family. Here we have personal conjecturing about his own family. I have not done what these other people, you're going to hear examples where people prophesied of the return of Christ. They prophesied of the war ending. They prophesied of things that affected the world. To my knowledge, I have not once prophesied anything that wasn't true. When I said Israel is a great deception of Antichrist, it is proving ever more to be. When I said that Donald Trump is being animated by a spirit of Antichrist, he is not a chosen servant of righteousness, it is being proven more and more every day. Oh, yeah. These things are true. Mm-hmm. When I said America is not going to come back from the brink, all the way back in 2015, that America's days were numbered, that it was never going to recover, I ask, is that coming true? Yes or no? Mm-hmm. So again, let me pause on that. In light of being right about so many of those things, I have to be wrong about a few big ones, because otherwise, in my personal life, big ones, otherwise I become prideful. Mm-hmm. So George Whitefield, The Expectation in 1743, when his first son was born, listen to this, this is a doozy. Whitefield felt a divine impression, quote unquote, that this child was destined to be a great preacher who would surpass him in ministry. He publicly baptized the boy in front of a massive crowd, naming him John after John the Baptist, and prophesying that the child would be, quote, a preacher of the everlasting gospel. The reality: the baby died of a sudden seizure at only 4 months old. The aftermath: Whitefield was devastated, not just by the loss, but by the realization that he had mistaken his own fatherly desires for the voice of God. He later wrote candidly about how he had, quote, he had conjectured incorrectly and warned others against trusting inward impressions over the written word. Therefore, since he was wrong and he prophesied that the child would be, quote, a preacher of the everlasting gospel, we must apply Deuteronomy 18:22. That is a message the Lord has not spoken. That prophet has spoken presumptuously. Do not be afraid of him. Number two, Edward Irving and the Apostolic Restoration. In the early 19th century, Edward Irving was a superstar in London, a brilliant, godly Scottish minister and a friend to thinkers like Thomas Carlyle. The Expectations: Irving became convinced that the spiritual gifts, tongues, prophecy, and healing were about to be restored to the church in a specific world-changing wave that would usher in the second coming. He staked his entire reputation on the idea that God was, quote, moving now in the 1830s to restore the office of the apostle. The reality: while there were, quote, manifestations in his church, they did not lead to the global revival he expected. Instead, they led to chaos, his trial for heresy, and his eventual ejection from the Church of Scotland. The foolishness: he died at age 42, looking broken and somewhat, quote, deceived by the movement he had championed. Yet history remembers him as a man of staggering personal holiness who simply poured himself out for a move of God he thought was closer than it actually was. You can see how many people this applies to when you think of people who have family members or personal ministers who have all conjectured about things that have not happened in the world, things that have not happened in their lives. I would dare to say you could find a false prophet inside the heart of every single Christian that's ever lived, mm-hmm. unless they just have this belief that God is dead, like the clockmaker deism, you know, theology, that God is just a clockmaker. He wound up all the natural laws of the universe, and then he stepped back and lets it do its thing. If you believe that, then you don't believe he's involved. You don't believe he speaks. You don't believe he's alive. But if you're going to walk with God, if you're going to have a living, breathing relationship with him, you're going to make mistakes about what he said, what he didn't say, what you thought he promised, what he did promise, etc. Mm-hmm. And God has, I have proven in the Bible that God will intentionally deceive you. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see that these people concluded some of this as well, that God intentionally, just like Jeremiah, was intentionally deceived. But nobody wants to believe that. Nobody wants to believe that God would do that. Number three, Cotton Mather and the Calculated End. A giant of the American Puritan era, Cotton Mather was a polymath and a man who spent hours every day on his knees in prayer. The Expectation: using intense biblical study and what he believed were, quote, divine promptings, Mather predicted the exact year of Christ's return. He predicted it three times. Each date passed without incident. Each failure was a public humiliation for a man of his stature. In his private diaries, he wrestled with, quote, the dark night of the soul, wondering why God would allow him to feel so much certainty only to be proven wrong. He remained a pillar of the New England church, but these failures served as a permanent thorn in his side. tempering his later years with a much needed and painful humility. And I believe that my being wrong, even though I was only wrong personally, I was only wrong that I wasn't going to marry Laura. That had nothing to do with impacting any person's life. That didn't affect anybody's life. Yeah. My believing that you and I would be married in New Zealand on 9/11, that doesn't affect anybody's life. What affects people's life has been the words I've spoken about Jesus Christ and the warnings I've made that time is running out for you to get right with God. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that affect your life, my teachings of the Bible, not my personal conjecturings about what I believe and hope that God's going to do in my life. Sweetheart, even David Wilkerson was wrong. Moving into the modern era, David Wilkerson, author of The Cross and the Switchblade, was a widely respected, quote, watchman figure known for his integrity and rejection of prosperity teaching. The Expectation, in March of 2009, Wilkerson posted, quote, a prediction on his blog titled An Urgent Message. He stated he was, quote, compelled by the Holy Spirit to warn of an imminent economic collapse and social earth-shattering calamity that would hit New York City and other major cities within a very short, specific window. The reality, while the world was in a recession, the specific apocalyptic, quote, calamity he described did not occur in the timeline people inferred from his, quote, urgent tone. The aftermath. Many critics used this label to call him a false prophet. Wilkerson himself had to clarify that he was, quote, a watchman, not a prophet of dates, but the, quote, certainty of his initial delivery left many of his followers confused. He died in 2011, still highly regarded for his character and his work with the poor, but having faced the, quote, foolishness of a timing-sensitive warning that didn't materialize as he stated. It then asks the question, you know, why does this happen to the godly? When you study these lives, a few patterns emerge as to why God might allow, quote, a fruitful servant to miss the mark so spectacularly. One, the idol of certainty. God often uses these failures to remind the leader and the church that we, quote, see through a glass darkly. This is what Paul talked about. We know in part, we prophesy in part. A leader's reputation for, quote, hearing God can become a subtle idol. A public failure destroys the idol. There is no doubt that that was how I was leaning towards my ability to hear God. The false God challenge is really a remarkable.
Especially after God put you and Persis together. I mean, that was just textbook. He told you what to do. It happened.
So without me knowing it, I think I was starting to probably lean on that.
It's been the opposite with you and I.
It has been. Everything has been so difficult. So it says, it writes back, and this is almost the end. It says, in the lives of these, quote, spiritual giants, the very thing that made them effective, their intense focus and sensitivity to the spiritual realm, which I would believe is true of me, was often the same thing that could lead to subtle, holy form of pride. They could begin to trust their perception of God more than God himself.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this very thing, that if you're not careful, you can begin to trust in the providence, yeah, the right. signs that your ex is coming back.
Yeah.
And you lean so heavily on
that's
that.
True.
And then if God rips that out from underneath of you, you what are you left to stand on? It, you find out if you have true faith or not.
Yeah.
Is your faith in the giver of the providence or the providence? Mm-hmm. Is your faith in the giver of the gift or in the gift? Is your faith in the giver of the promise or in the promise? You find out when something you have believed so strongly that you believe with certainty God has told you doesn't come to pass. It says they could begin to trust their perception of God more than God himself. To use your phrasing, God often allowed these, quote, incorrect conjectures to act as a surgical strike against their self-reliance. Here are a few more instances where godly men were publicly humbled by a missed word or a failed open door. Number one, John Wesley. Before he was the father of Methodism, John Wesley was a rigid, highly disciplined young priest who felt, quote, a divine certainty that his mission to the American colonies was a great, quote, open door for a spiritual revolution. The Expectation, Wesley believed he was called to convert the Native Americans and establish a perfect primitive church in Georgia. He saw himself as a modern-day apostle to the New World. The reality, the mission was an unmitigated disaster. He struggled with the language, alienated his congregation with his legalism, and became entangled in a messy, failed romance that ended with him fleeing the colony under threat of arrest. This is like what happened to Brother Young when he was called to go to Zhengzhou City and all the leaders said, oh, the Spirit of the Lord is moving you to go. And he got three confirmations to go. They needed leadership. He gets there and he only makes it a day and a half before they come in. The secret police arrest him, dragging bloody through the streets, making an example out of him. Yeah. The humbling. On the boat back to England, he famously wrote, I went to America to convert the Indians, but oh, who shall convert me? Mm-hmm. Number three, A.B. Simpson. This is A.W. Tozer's mentor. Mm-hmm. And I've quoted him so many times. The quote, ambition of the Alliance. A.B. Simpson, founder of the Christian and Missionary Alliance, was a man of staggering productivity and character. However, his early years were marked by what he later called humbling lessons regarding his own strength and timing. The expectation. As a young, brilliant pastor in New York, Simpson had, quote, conjectured that a massive, immediate revival would occur through his refined intellectual preaching. He expected God to bless his, quote, ambitious plans for a world-class ministry. The reality, he suffered a total physical and nervous breakdown. His doctor gave him only months to live. He found himself unable to preach, unable to work, and looking like a failure in the prime of his life.
Wow.
The humbling. Simpson later admitted that God had to, quote, annihilate his ambition. He had to learn that his, quote, certainty about his ministry was actually fueled by a desire for success. It was only after this total, quote, breaking of his pride that he received a healing that he wasn't even looking for and began the work that actually changed the world. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
It says the anatomy of a divine humbling. When we look at these men, it seems that God used their, quote, wrong conjectures for three specific reasons. To destroy the, quote, expert status. A leader who is, quote, always right about what God is doing becomes a danger to themselves. I can hear Heather Zibiotti. And what God says to you comes to pass every single time.
Yeah.
How could I not become prideful about that?
Yeah.
Oh my God in heaven, I don't even know if I want to read anymore. I just want him to know how much I'm thankful that he did this to me. And so, wow, this is so incredible and edifying because I know that this is what God had to do to me. If he would have let me continue on like that, I would eventually become totally worthless. He would have had to throw me in hell. That's what will happen to people who are prideful. To protect the people, it prevents the followers from worshiping the leader's, quote, gift. When the leader looks foolish, the people are forced to look past the man to the master.
Yeah.
This is John the Baptist being put in prison. He must become greater, I must become less.
Yeah.
To shift the focus from doing to being. Most of these men, like Wesley and Simpson, were obsessed with work and timing. The failure forced them into a state of waiting and dependence, which was the very character trait God wanted to use for their true lasting fruit. It takes a very, quote, godly and fruitful servant to survive looking foolish. A person of lesser character would have made excuses or blamed God. These men instead allowed the embarrassment to become the, quote, altar where their pride was sacrificed.